They raised the walls the second day with the help of two bachelor neighbors to the east who came drifting in. The roof was well along when Andrew decided on the third day that the Nathans had more help than they needed.
Eli, I reckon I'll get down to San Felipe. You just follow the river west and you'll come to Michael's place. Him and Marie will be tickled to see you.
If you happen into Mr. Austin, I'd assume you didn't remember me to him. I ain't as fast on my feet as I used to was.
Andrew promised the Nathans that he would stop by on his way back from San Felipe and perhaps eat the first meal cooked on the hearth in their new cabin. Then he set off to complete the trip he had started 3 days earlier. He was 2 hours on the trail when he encountered a trio of settlers, a father and two sons, who said their name was Mann. Their home was up on the Brazos River. Quentin Mann, the elder, rode a mule.
Looks pretty clear to us that they were stole.
Harlan, the older of the two sons, rode a young gelding that seemed not yet well broken. The other rode a black mare Andrew thought was old enough to have carried George Washington. They were looking for some lost horses. They showed Andrew a set of tracks they'd been following. The tracks led southward.
They ain't never showed any inclination to leave home. All we got left to ride is these three. They just one notch better than being afoot.
For a fleeting moment, Andrew thought of Eli and the horses he was trading in the colony. He quickly dismissed that notion and felt a little guilty over entertaining it at all. Eli skirted along the edge of customs laws, but he had never been regarded as a thief. The Austin colony had suffered little from thievery, thanks to Austin's careful selection of the people he accepted as settlers. This was the sort of thing Andrew would have expected from the Blackwoods, but they had been escorted out of Texas.
You all ever have Indian trouble up your way?
That possibility has crossed our minds.
If it was Indians and you found them, what would you do?
Well, see how fast a mule and a wore-out old horse can run.
Well, I do wish you luck.
Andrew watched them for a few minutes as they proceeded southward, following the tracks. His first move in San Felipe was to find the Mexican midwife and trade her the ham he'd brought from Michael's smokehouse for the preparation Marie hoped would ease her pregnancy discomforts. He rode then to the store and traded the proprietor the hides from his pack horse for a few supplies. He seldom visited the settlement without paying a courtesy call upon Stephen Austin, without whose self-sacrifice and sometimes painful negotiations with the authorities, none of these Americans would have been allowed to settle in Mexican Texas. Andrew found Austin looking harried and overworked as usual. After some casual small talk about Michael and Marie and crop prospects up on the Colorado River, Andrew mentioned his encounter with the horse-hunting Manns. It was the first Austin had heard.
It is possible that some of those blackguards who have illegally settled the Redlands up against Louisiana have come down here to see what they can steal. Or it could be Mexican outlaws from the south, but most likely the horse is simply strayed. I'll make some inquiries and see if anyone has had any losses.
Austin gave Andrew a moment's frowning study.
I realize you're isolated and don't see many people where you live. But I wonder if you've heard of any discontent, any stirring against the government?
Nothing of any consequence.
Well, if any should arise, I hope you'll do what you can to stifle it before it spreads. Such a thing is very dangerous for our position here in Texas.
Andrew prepared to go.
If you're not in a hurry, I hear a rumor that there is a minister about, and he plans to hold services tonight out at the Hawkins Farm.
Are you going?
Nah, I can't. Under the laws of Mexico, only Catholic services are allowed to be conducted here. As alcalde, it would be my duty to take legal action should I witness any violation.
But if you know about it,
I know nothing. One hears rumors about many things. One cannot waste his time running after every rumor.
It was not always the letter of the law that counted in colonial Texas. It was the appearance of the law. It occurred to Andrew that he might talk this minister into riding out to the Nathan's place. A visit from a man of the cloth would please Mrs. Nathan almost as much as moving into the new cabin. Marie would probably enjoy such a visit as well, though her French and Spanish upbringing had given her the faith officially sanctioned in Mexico.
Well, I believe I'll go. A little churching wouldn't hurt me too much.
It was dusk when Andrew arrived at the Hawkins farm. He estimated that close to 100 people were gathered around a double log cabin. Because the summer weather was beneficent and the cabin much too small for so many, the services were being conducted outdoors. The minister stood in the open dog run, his back to Andrew. A large gathering crowded in front of him. Andrew could see that he was baptizing several babies of varying sizes, born since the last clerical visitation. A large black-bound Bible sat on a chair beside him, but he didn't seem to need it.
And I say unto all here assembled, above all, hold unfailing your love for one another, since love covers a multitude of sins.
Andrew tied his horses out away from the services, among those of the earlier arrivals, and strode around toward the front of the cabin to join those already in place.
Is contained therein. Now, we came here today not only to baptize with water, but also to join these couples in holy matrimony in the presence of the Lord and in the sight of this company.
Andrew wondered idly if any of the babies belonged to one or more of the three couples he saw standing before the dog run for whom the preacher had performed marriage ceremonies. Probably not, but such a thing was by no means unknown in isolated settlements where the Lord's messenger seldom came. The minister now had the Bible in his left hand and his right hand uplifted.
It is your mission and that of your descendants to take this new land and bring it to full blossom, to make it an empire that will shine forevermore to the glory of Him who sent us here.
Andrew thought Mrs. Nathan would enjoy hearing that message. The marrying and baptizing done, the minister moved on.
And now, if you good people will forgive me, I must pause to join you all for a bit of supper, to rebuild my strength so I may properly deliver the urgent message of salvation I have brought for all of you tonight. May the Lord's countenance shine upon you and bless you and make us all truly thankful for His bounty. Now let's eat!
Most of the people had brought food, and they began carrying it forward, placing it on a long, crude table assembled from split logs in front of the cabin. This would be a community supper, the participants contributing because few farmers in the colony could afford to host so many people out of their own limited resources. Andrew felt a little guilty that he had nothing to put on the table. The little stuff he had bought at the store was for Marie, not for himself. It mattered little, though. He knew he was as welcome here as if he'd brought a side of beef. As a whole, Austin's old 300 and those who had followed them were a gregarious and generous lot. This, he thought, might be his chance to get close to the minister and ask him to visit the settlers out on the Colorado. He waited his turn, for many people had crowded around. The man's back was to Andrew.
Preacher, could I talk to you?
The heavy-set minister turned. A chill shuddered through Andrew when he saw the black patch over one eye.
Fairweather.
The minister's jaw went slack as he stared at Andrew. In his surprise, no words came. Fairweather grabbed at the big black Bible to keep from dropping it to the ground. Andrew became conscious of several people staring at him and at the black-clad minister.
Maybe we better walk off out yonder a ways where we can talk in private.
Fairweather looked him over suspiciously.
I'm not armed. My rifle's on my horse.
If you will excuse me, please, this young gentleman and I have some unfinished matters to discuss.
The pair walked away until they were out of earshot.
I thought that those matters were finished a long time ago. Figure by now somebody had killed you.
Yeah, the Lord has been kind to me since our last meeting.
Kinder to you than to them around you, I would imagine. What kind of swindle are you trying to pull here? You're no more a minister than I am.
Oh, I am no longer the same man I was when last you saw me.
You look the same to me. You were nothing but a trail pirate. You used that preacher disguise to put us off our guard so you could rob and murder us on the road to Texas. If you ever worked for anybody besides yourself, it was for Satan. It sure wasn't for the Lord.
Andrew knew that the man's name was not even Fairweather. He had assumed that name, taken from a real minister he had robbed, and very possibly even killed. But Fairweather was the only name Andrew knew him by.
I will admit that in those evil days I was not what I appeared. But I underwent a great revelation after my parting with you and your brother. Like Saul on the road to Damascus, I was blinded by a miracle. And then I could see as never before.
You was blinded by a bullwhip in the hands of a woman you turned over to your gang of cutthroats to be raped and killed.
And a just retribution it was. It took the loss of one eye to open the other to the path of righteousness.
Righteousness? You just figured out a new way to rob people is all. Your words are just as bogus as them weddings you just performed. Nobody ever ordained you to be a preacher.
I need no man's ordination. I took mine from the book, wherein reposes all truth.
Andrew began to wonder. He put little stock in sudden reformations, but it was just barely possible that the old fraud had used the Bible so long as a device for larceny that he finally had come to believe his own preachings.
If you're looking to take up a big collection from these folks, you're in for an awful disappointment. There's not enough cash money in this crowd to buy a demijohn of Kentucky squeezins.
There are rewards far greater than money could buy. I carry the word so that I might earn that great reward for my soul when it comes time to depart this world of care.
It's a damn shame you didn't depart a long time ago.
But Andrew saw that these people believed. It would be cruel to rob them of their pleasure and a rare opportunity to hear someone deliver the word in tones as persuasive as Fairweather's.
Tell you what, I'll stay around and listen to your preaching, and maybe I won't tell anybody what you really are. But there's a catch to it.
And what might that be?
I want you to tell them before you start that you don't want any of their money, and that you ain't going to take up any collection.
Well, now that young gentleman is a heavy test of my sincerity.
I can't offer you any better. If you won't do it, I'd advise you to leave right now. Otherwise, they just might stone you to death, like in the book.
Love of money is the root of all evil, my young friend. I have no need of it. I shall take up no collection.
Fine. Go get your supper, then give these good folks the best sermon you ever preached. I'll be listening.
Do that. You might find yourself uplifted.
Andrew watched with a frown as Fairweather turned away from him to the warm reception of the crowd. Either the man had truly reformed, or he had become an even bigger fraud than Andrew remembered. Andrew ate skimpily, not wishing to abuse hospitality when he'd brought nothing to the table but his appetite. He noted that Fairweather suffered from no such compunctions, but ate heartily and enjoyed the attention of the people who thronged around him. Andrew wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt, but remembered all too well his and Michael's encounter with the bogus minister on their way to Texas. Twice the man had tried to kill them. He had also tried to appropriate two wagon loads of whiskey belonging to a woman teamster named Sally Boone. But her prowess with the whip had been his undoing. The skill that enabled her to knock a fly off the Nye leader's ear let her take out Fairweather's eye. The supper done and the crowd quieted, Fairweather offered a prayer, then launched into the biblical story about Saul and the road to Damascus. Andrew suspected that was for his benefit. Fairweather talked about the blinding of Saul, who had been a scourge to the Christians, and his redemption as a true believer under his new name of Paul. Fairweather's name change had come long before his conversion, if indeed there had been a conversion. Andrew saw that the people were swept up in the glory of Fairweather's message, and after a while he began to feel the magnetism himself. Some of the doubt still clung, but he began to feel that the weight of evidence was swinging over to Fairweather's side. If he was not sincere, he was the best play actor Andrew had ever seen. The meeting broke up finally. Some of the crowd began leaving for home. Others would camp the night and go home in the daylight. Fairweather, of course, was offered the Hawkins bedroom in the double cabin. To his credit, he declined in favor of resting among the campers. Andrew sidled up to him just before the minister retired.
That was a pretty powerful load you dumped on those folks.
It is written that the good shepherd always feeds his flock.
You got any other flocks to tend in these parts?
Oh, where the spirit beckons, I follow.
There's some folks up in the Colorado River that appreciate hearing you. I'll take you tomorrow.
I thought you were doubting Thomas.
I am. I still got my doubts that you know the master, but you do know the word. And that's what the folks want to hear.
I shall be ready.
Just one thing, Fairweather. One false move and I'll do to you what you tried to do to me and Michael. I'll shoot you and tell God you died.
As was his custom, Andrew left his blanket at first light, but he found the Reverend Fairweather not inclined to early rising.
Oh, the Lord provided the night so that we could sleep. It is still night.
That rooster yonder don't agree with you.
Man was blessed with more reason than a rooster. When the good folks start fixing breakfast, I shall be up and giving praise for the new day.
Oh. In fact, Fairweather gave praise several times. Many people who had camped set about building small fires and fixing their own meager breakfasts rather than impose upon the hosts. Fairweather arose when the first smell of frying ham reached him. He went from camp to camp, fire to fire, blessing the food and partaking liberally as it was offered to him. Andrew judged that he had eaten enough to kill an average man. But when the farmer Hawkins walked out onto the dog run and bade the minister come into his breakfast, Fairweather obliged him. Andrew itched to be saddled up and gone, but Fairweather had a parting sermon for those who'd stayed over. He would not be rushed. He exalted to glorious sharing. He spoke of the angel who visits unaware and promised to be back on this circuit before long. Everybody pressed around, wanting to shake his hand one more time. Andrew despaired of ever getting started. But eventually, they set out upon the trail. Fairweather looked back over his shoulder at the people behind him, preparing to return to their homes, refreshed in the spirit.
There is great joy in such fellowship.
Some possibility of a bellyache.
It felt strange to Andrew, riding with the man who once sought to rob and kill him and Michael. He wondered what Michael would say, though Michael's opinion would not alter Andrew's actions one way or the other. Except for Fairweather's eating like a starved wolf, Andrew couldn't see that the man had abused these folks' hospitality. If he left them feeling better for his coming, what was the harm? And far be it from Andrew to deny a similar comfort to Mrs. Nathan, who felt that a new home needed a minister's blessing. People who left everything behind them to come out and settle a wild new land deserved whatever consolation might come their way. He had forgotten how many farms lay between San Felipe and the new place settled by the Nathan family. Fairweather insisted upon stopping at each one to extend his best wishes, inquiring if there was any spiritual need he might help satisfy. A ride that should have taken a few hours under normal circumstances stretched through that day and into the next. Fairweather resisted Andrew's efforts to push him along.
One does not rush the message or the messenger.
Suspicion gnawed at Andrew, although the people along the way seemed to accept Fairweather without questioning his claim to speak for higher authority. He knew the book backward and forward, it seemed. He must have done a lot of reading in it since Andrew and Michael had first encountered him on the trail to Texas. At that time, Andrew had smelled a skunk when Fairweather spoke of Jonah in the lion's den. He seemed to have his story straight this time, though Andrew by no means considered himself an expert on the subject. Upon arrival, Andrew found the Nathan's roof finished and ready to be tested by rain. Mrs. Nathan was beside herself with joy when she saw Fairweather dismount. She recognized Fairweather's calling by his black suit and the Bible which he took from his saddlebag before Andrew had a chance to introduce him. Bachelor neighbors Joe Smith and Walker Younce, who had helped raise the walls and work on the roof, were still hanging around. They probably enjoyed Mrs. Nathan's cooking too much to hurry back to their own places. Andrew suspected that both were also interested in the girl, Birdie. Their eyes followed her constantly. By Andrew's standards, she was still underage, but scarcity on the frontier made girls a much sought-after commodity. They tended to marry early. A rose hardly had time to blossom before it was plucked. Lige Willett had gone home. Family men had responsibilities. Andrew was surprised when Eli Pleasant walked out from the cool shade of the dog run to shake his hand.
I thought you'd be gone to Michael and Marie's by now.
Yeah, wasn't no hurry about it. These here are pleasant folks. I don't think I've et better since the time I set my feet under your mama's table back in Tennessee.
Eli glanced toward the woman.
Ms. Nathan is almighty tickled that you brought a reverend with you.
I hope she won't find no reason to regret it.
Any reason she might?
His name is Fairweather. You've heard me and Michael speak of him.
I don't remember you saying anything good, but maybe having a bad reverend is better than not having any reverend at all.
I hope so. I never saw a black horse turn white before. I'm afraid a little rain might wash the paint off this one.
Yeah, then we'd better help him pray for sunshine.
Fairweather did his duties as if he were being paid. He blessed the new cabin, he blessed the family, he blessed the field and the livestock, and he blessed the big meal Mrs. Nathan set on the newly hewn pine table. One of the Nathan youngsters let curiosity get the better of his manners.
Mr. Reverend, sir, what happened to your eye?
Fairweather gave Andrew a quick glance across the table.
I once allowed myself to gaze upon wickedness, and the eye was taken for penance. You have two good eyes, my young gentleman. Take care that they look only upon what is worthy in the sight of the Lord.
Amen.
Nathan got up and went to the door upon hearing the horses outside. He cast a quick gaze upon his rifle over the new mantle, but didn't move toward it.
Three men had just ridden in with a dozen or so horses.
Andrew followed Nathan outside. Eli Pleasant trailed behind them. Fairweather did not pause in his good work at the table. Andrew recognized the father and two sons named Man that he had met on the trail to San Felipe. They were riding better horses this time. The younger of the sons sat hunched in the saddle. As the horse turned, Andrew saw a bandage wrapped around the young man's arm. The father and the older son pushed the horses through the open gate of Nathan's pole pen, dust swirling around them. The son stepped down from his horse and pushed into place the poles that served as a gate. Quentin Mann turned and raised his hand in greeting. He looked haggard and worn and worried.
And these horses belong to you folks.
Andrew stepped forward and Mann recognized him.
I'm seeing you down yonder a ways, didn't I?
Looks like you found your horses.
Ours and some more. Hope you folks might know who the rest of them belong to.
Eli walked up to the boy whose arm was bandaged. He took hold of the bridle reins.
Son, you look mighty hard used. I see the blood in that wrapping.
He got an arrow in his arm. Me and Harlan, we pulled it out. A good lady named Willett on a farm over yonder cleaned the wound and wrapped it up for him.
You took these horses away from Indians?
Well, one Indian. He was holding them while the rest of the bunch was off somewhere, probably looking for more horses to steal. We come on him sudden and taking him by surprise, but he was quick as a panther putting that arrow in my boy's arm. I shot him before he could take another one out of his quiver.
Kill him?
Stone cold dead.
What about the rest of the Indians?
Well, we didn't figure it'd be smart to stay around and wait for him. We just gathered up all the horses there was and pushed them away from there as hard as they would run.
You know what kind of Indians they was?
Got no idea. The one we saw was tattooed a right smart.
Waco more than likely.
Andrew's anxiety continued to build. He gave Eli a quick, searching look. The old smuggler's eyes were narrowed with concern.
They'll be wanting revenge for the one that was shot. They follow the trail of the horses.
They'll come to the Willett farm sure as hell.
And it's just a short ways on over to our places, Michael's and mine. They could hit there just as easy.
We never intended to cause trouble for other folks. We just went to get our horses back. I couldn't just sit there and let that Indian finish killing my boy. I had to shoot him, don't you see?
We see, but I doubt them Indians will. Eli, I've got to hurry and warn Michael and Marie.
Now I'll get myself over to Willett's as fast as I can. He's so easygoing, he may not realize the danger he's in.
Fairweather had sensed the excitement and wandered out to see what it was all about.
Is there anything I can do?
If you've really got somebody up there who'll listen to you, you can pray for a bunch of innocent folks.
Eli, I'll ride with you over to the Willett farm. If the Indians do come by, those good folk will need all the fighting men they can get.
I didn't think you were armed.
I am armed with the power of the word. I've also got a pistol buried deep in my saddlebag. One never knows when he might encounter a heathen.
You'd be the one to know about heathens.
Andrew did not take time for goodbyes. He quickly threw the saddle on his brown horse and put him into a run, leaving the pack horse behind. He looked back once. Eli and Fairweather followed far behind him, but he didn't wait. Their trail was shorter than his. He kept the brown horse in a lope as much as he dared, slowing him to a trot frequently to give him a chance to recover his wind. His imagination ran wild and free. Andrew had never been in an Indian fight or seen the aftermath of a raid, though he had heard about them often enough as a boy in Tennessee. Mordecai Lewis had been an Indian fighter, leaving home and family several times that Andrew could remember to join an expedition of rescue or revenge. His descriptions when he returned were graphic and terrifying. Those descriptions played through Andrew's mind now as he imagined himself finding Michael's cabin ablaze, Michael and Marie, and the boy, slaughtered. He left the longer trail that would have taken him by the Willard farm and cut straight across toward his own. In his anxiety, he almost ran the brown horse to the ground. He forced himself to slow, though it was painful. He would be of no help to anyone if he killed the horse and couldn't reach the farm in time. He kept watching for smoke. The brown horse was lathered with sweat when Andrew pushed him at last over the final hill and saw Michael and Marie's cabin below. Everything looked normal. The only smoke was rising from the chimney. He felt a little foolish as relief rushed over him like a tide. All those Indian stories, he'd let them run away with him. Nearing the field, he saw Michael standing amid the corn, hoeing weeds. Andrew started waving his hat. Michael paused, then reluctantly walked out toward the fence to meet his younger brother.
You stayed gone long enough. Thought maybe you went all the way to Nacogdoches instead of San Felipe.
I might have stayed a little longer, but an emergency's come up.
Emergency? What kind?
The kind that wear feathers in their hair.
Where at?
Maybe here before long. I think you better lay down that hoe and get in the cabin. They make short work of you if they caught you out here in the open. They won't be as apt to rush a cabin that they know has got armed men in it.
Michael picked up a rifle he'd leaned against the rail fence, and he left the hoe in its place.
How'd you come to know all this?
Andrew explained it to him as he rode on up toward the cabin, Michael striding along beside him.
You say Eli's in the country? I'd give a pretty penny to see that old man again.
You will. He said he'd be coming along. Right now he's over at the Willits lending a hand in case the Indians come by there.
We've never had any Indian trouble out here to speak of. Little horse and mule stealing is all. Except if the Karanka was down on the coast, they ain't killed hardly anybody.
We've never killed any of them before.
Marie had seen them coming. She waited on the dog run, smiling her pleasure.
It is good that no one is angry now. It is not good here when you argue.
Whatever argument we got, it has to be set aside for a while. We've got something bigger to worry about.
Don't you be getting scared, Marie, but there's a chance Indians may be coming this way.
Marie looked anxiously toward the kitchen door. Little Mordecai came out.
How do, Uncle Andrew?
Mordecai, you best be staying in the cabin.
Marie gathered the boy up into her arms.
Where's your horse, Michael?
Saw him grazing down by the river a little while ago.
I best find him and bring him up here where we can watch him. The reason the Indians are out and about is to pick up horses.
If you see the cow, Andrew...
Indians? Are we going to see Indians?
Andrew headed quickly for the river. From one day to the next, even one part of the day to the next, there was no telling where Michael's bay horse might graze. He was a free roamer. But he seemed to have a strong preference for one particular place downriver a mile or so from Michael's cabin. Andrew supposed it had something to do with the soil there, and the flavor or nutrients it put into the grass. He reined the brown in that direction, his senses keen. He was very much aware that the horse might not be the only thing he'd found. He had traveled only a short way when the bay came running toward him. Andrew reined up and the horse passed him by, eyes rolling in fright. The animal kept running, headed toward the cabin as if something were after him. Perhaps something was. Andrew's blood seemed to have ice in it as he held up a moment, staring hard in the direction from which the horse had come. He saw nothing, but a strong premonition made him shudder. He turned and followed the horse toward the cabin. He remembered that Marie was concerned about the milk cow, but he decided it would be prudent to let the cow take care of herself. She was a creature of habit. Come milking time, she'd amble in on her own. Indians had no use for cows, except once in a while to butcher one for the meat, as they would do with buffalo. They saw no pride of property in a cow. The bay had entered the pen of its own volition, stood with its neck over the fence, watching Andrew's return. Instinct had made it turn to a place of safety when frightened. Michael was on his way from the cabin to the pen. He shut the gate behind the bay and waited for Andrew to ride up.
What did you do to my horse? He came running in here like the day we heard a big cat over in the timber.
He ran by me the same way. I got a feeling he saw something and it wasn't a cat.
Michael asked no more questions. He bridled his bay horse, which trembled in fright. He patted the animal gently to calm it.
I've been thinking. We better tie the horses up against the cabin, just in case. Worst come to worst, we can put them in the cabin.
Might get a little crowded in there.
Better crowded than left afoot.
Andrew was startled to see Marie walking toward the river with a bucket in each hand. He dropped his reins and hurried down to intercept her.
You've got no business leaving the cabin. There's no telling where them Indians might be.
The buckets are nearly empty. Should they come and stay a long time, we will need their water.
I'll fetch it. You better get back yonder to the boy.
We will also need milk. You do not see the cow?
To tell the truth, I didn't look none too hard.
If it were men who had the babies, you would know the cow is more important than the horse.
Andrew watched as she turned and walked back toward the cabin.
If I ever find a woman for myself, she'll have to be a lot like Marie.
The emergency took precedence over other considerations, but did not eliminate them. Andrew was aware that Michael's resentment still simmered quietly beneath the surface.
Well, hell, if that's the way it's gotta be, then it'll just be that way.
He went out to the dog run and took a seat where he could watch most of three directions, including the front of the cabin where they had staked the horses. Michael said nothing. He took up a position at the other side of the dog run, his back to Andrew. He watched the opposite side of the cabin and westward, where the trees along the river stretched away into the horizon. West was his favorite direction, as it had always been their father's. After a time, Andrew was compelled to turn and look at him.
You didn't miss much.
Hmm.
They've had a plenty of rain over east. The early planted crops are looking good. Maybe late getting the rest of them into the ground, though. Mud.
Michael didn't even grunt. Andrew reflected that a certain amount of stubbornness went with being a Lewis, especially the oldest Lewis. It had been that way with their father. It would probably be that way with little Mordecai when he got old enough to assert himself over his younger brother or sister, whichever Marie turned out to be carrying.
Like I told you, the shape Marie's in, I didn't figure you ought to be going off and leaving.
I'd say that's a decision for me and Marie to make.
For you and Marie. Didn't look to me like you asked her one way or the other.
If you'd go find a wife of your own, you wouldn't have time to be telling me what all to do about mine.
I oughtn't have to tell you. You ought to know.
You don't understand how it is with me. Nobody could understand except maybe Papa. He was the same way.
You got him killed and left Mama a widow.
Andrew decided that further argument might only lead to a fight. He felt awkward, for over the years the two brothers had seldom traded cross words.
Seems kind of hot, even for this time of year.
Andrew decided to let silence prevail. He watched the line of trees that bordered the river on its easterly flow. That, he judged, would be the most likely point of approach should Indians come. They would hardly want to ride in from the open country that stretched beyond the field, for they'd be seen far away. They would want to use the cover of the timber as long as possible, then likely as not come charging up from the nearest point, hoping to catch the Lewises unready. That was the direction from which the bay horse had come running. Andrew strongly suspected the raiders had tried to take the horse and he'd run away from them. That meant they were probably down in that direction somewhere. He could only hope they were well on their way northwestward, back the way from which they had originally come. That would likely make them Wacos, as Eli had said, or possibly Tawakonees. From what Andrew had heard, these were kindred tribes which lived, hunted, and did some limited farming along the Brazos River, far beyond the Texas settlements. It was claimed they were much less nomadic than, say, the Comanches, and even lived in lodges made of grass. They were not given to perpetual war, as the Comanches seemed to be, against the Spanish and the Mexicans, but they were not reluctant to raid and to fight against such other tribes as were considered enemies. That they had raided little in Austin's colonies was fortunate for the colonists. Like the Comanches, they were perhaps still trying to figure out just what kind of people these Americans were. The Manns, father and sons, had shown them what kind of enemies the Americans could be. Andrew sat for perhaps 2 hours, enough that his rump was beginning to feel sore and his back ached. Changing positions seemed not to help much. He got up and stretched, then walked a little to stir his blood into better circulation. He saw Michael's bay horse jerk its head around, its ears pointed eastward. Little Mordecai's spotted dog, which had appeared to be asleep beside Andrew on the dog run, raised up and looked around. Horsemen appeared on the rim of a hill in the direction of the Willett family's place. Andrew felt a quick chill.
Michael! You better come look!
Michael was there in an instant, peering in the direction Andrew's finger pointed.
Look like Indians?
No, looks like white folks to me. Best I can count, there's 8 of them.
With his fingers, Andrew stretched the skin around the edge of his right eye. A trick he had found gave him a moment of improved vision, though to hold it long had an adverse effect.
If I'm not mistaken, one of them is Eli Pleasant. Looks like the horse he was riding anyway.
Eli.
Marie had heard their quiet speculation and ventured out onto the dog run. But when the boy Mordecai tried to follow from the kitchen, she shooed him back through the door.
The Indians are already gone, you think?
Most of the riders stopped at the top of a rise. Only two came ahead. One was Eli Pleasant. The other, Andrew had not found Michael in a mood for listening much, so he had not told him about the Reverend Fairweather.
That's Eli on the left. You best gird yourself up for a little kick in the belly when you see who's with him.
Michael recognized the man.
I'll be goddamned. Fairweather? Or whatever his name is. How come somebody hasn't killed him by now?
Don't you be taking a notion to do it yourself. He's got folks convinced that he's the holiest man since John the Baptist. I'm kind of wondering myself. Maybe he's changed.
Only if you can change a wolf into a sheep.
Any other time, Eli Pleasant would have swung to the ground and pumped Michael's hand until his arm felt ready to come off at the shoulder. But he sat on his horse, his face grave.
You folks all right here?
We're doing just fine, Eli. Mighty glad to see you.
Michael walked out and extended his hand. He pointedly ignored Fairweather. Eli took Michael's hand, but there was no joy in his eyes at their reunion.
I'd be tickled to see you too, Michael, if things was different. But them folks back yonder, they ain't passed so well. There's been killing done.
Who's dead?
Lige Willett, that helped us raise the cabin for the Nathan family. Yeah, it was done before me and the Reverend got there to warn him. Willett was out plowing his field, and they come upon him unawares. His boy Daniel was out there riding a pony I traded them. The Indians taking him along.
And what of Mrs. Willett? What has happened to her?
Well, she's all right, except she's been left a widow. The rest of the family was close to the cabin. They seen what happened, but was too far to help. They got inside and bolted the doors. The Indians come up close, but they decided not to go against the walls. They rode off, taking all the Willett horses, and the boy crying for his mama.
Andrew remembered the eager boy he had carried behind him on his saddle just a few days earlier. And he remembered the jolly face, the jovial stories told by Lige Willett. He felt like crying a little himself. He pointed his chin toward the horseman who waited at a distance.
Who's that yonder?
Well, that's Willett's bigger boy, Zeb, and Man and his older son, and Nathan and some other folks. We followed the Indians' trail. They didn't miss your place by more than a mile or so. Probably crossed the river right down yonder, just beyond that rise where you couldn't see them.
Andrew hadn't seen them, but Michael's bay horse had. The Indians had been in too big a hurry to try to chase him down.
We ought not to be standing here wasting time. I'll fetch me some powder and shot, and I'll go with you.
Andrew saw Marie's face fall in dismay. He turned on Michael in a flush of anger.
No, you won't. I'll go. You stay here and take care of your family.
When are you going to quit trying to tell me what to do?
When you start doing what you ought to do without me having to tell you.
Michael glared, then strode toward his staked bay horse. Andrew started after him in long, angry steps. Michael took the reins. Andrew grabbed them up near the bit.
Marie needs you at home. So does that boy. You're not going.
Andrew, I ain't hit you since we was boys, but I'm fixing to now if you don't turn loose on my horse.
Gentlemen, this is not a time for quarreling. There is a young boy yonder in the wilderness crying out for rescue.
Michael grabbed Andrew's wrist and tried to twist it to free the rein. Andrew fought back, shoving his brother up against the bay horse. Marie stepped between them.
You will stop fighting, both of you. I'll not have it. I will not.
You can't stay here by yourself.
She won't. They're gathering up all the women folks and youngins from around here and taking them to the Willett place. He's got the best protection. There'll be a wagon along here pretty soon to fetch Marie and the boy.
That is best. Mrs. Willett will need friends with her. There we will be safe enough.
Well, the Indians appear to have already gone away from here anyhow. Probably trying to get back to where they come from as quick as they can.
Andrew backed away from Michael, but his blood still ran hot. He faced Marie.
His place is here with you. No telling when we might come back.
Marie touched Andrew's arm and turned to look into her husband's face.
Michael's place is where Michael feels he needs to be. He will do what must be done. You are both needed. So go, now. The boy and I will be all right.
Andrew felt a little chastened. He sensed that Marie did not really want Michael to go, but it was to be expected that she would back her husband. She would put on a brave face and make Michael feel that the idea had been her own. He would not leave this place carrying a burden of guilt. She looked off toward the river and pointed.
The cow comes up to be milked. Her we will tie behind the wagon and take her with us. There will be other children at the Willets besides Mordecai. They will need much milk. But the chickens will have to take care of themselves.
Marie walked into the cabin with Michael, her arm around him. When Michael came out in a minute with his powder horn, a leather pouch, a sack of food, and one rolled blanket, she did not come with him. Michael did not look at Andrew, but moved to Eli.
She's busy gathering up the stuff to be ready when the wagon comes. She'll give you a proper greeting the next time.
God be with all who live in this house.
Michael gave Fairweather a surprised glance, but made no comment. He set the bay horse into a long trot toward the riders who waited farther on. Andrew was busy tying his blanket behind his saddle and had to spur hard to catch up. The other horsemen saw them leave the cabin and moved on down toward the river, passing out of sight. Michael altered his direction to compensate, for he had taken the lead without asking. The men were watering their horses when Michael, Andrew, Eli, and Fairweather reached them. The new settler, Nathan, was there, and the elder, Man, along with his son, Harlan, who had not been wounded. The bachelor farmers Smith and Younce were there, and young Zebediah Willett, his face dark with pain and anxiety and hatred. He looked much older than the 20 or so that he really was. This country could age a young man fast. Michael knew all of them except the newcomer Nathan, who quickly introduced himself.
It's a bad, bad time. I'd not thought to encounter Indian trouble. We'd just gotten settled.
Andrew rode up beside Zebediah Willett and placed a heavy hand on the youth's shoulder.
I'm mighty sorry, Zeb.
I seen it, Andrew. I seen the whole thing. I was just too far off to be of any help.
There's no way we can bring back your daddy, but if there's any chance at all, we'll bring back your little brother. Seems to me like you ought to go home now. You'd be a big consolation to your mother.
I can't. If you'd seen them, if they'd carried off your brother, you couldn't stay home either.
Andrew glanced at Michael.
No, I reckon not.
This is their trail, I take it?
Michael nodded toward a mass of horse tracks on the riverbank.
Well, they crossed here. Couldn't have been more than maybe 2-3 hours going by the sign.
Andrew flinched. That would have been about the time he had gone hunting Michael's bay horse. Michael put his horse into the water. The Indians had chosen a fording place that required the animals to swim only a few moments before putting their hooves on the riverbed. Andrew knew of a better place, a little farther downriver, but he supposed the Indians were not that well acquainted with this part of the country. The Waco's normal range was along the Brazos, not the Colorado. Michael turned once to see if everyone was following. Andrew pushed in just behind him. He glanced back. Fairweather, bringing up the rear, hesitated a minute before hitting the water on his big black horse. It quickly became apparent that this party had no real leader. Everybody was together by common consent, but sooner or later they would face a situation that demanded quick decisions. There would be no time to stop and take a vote.
They sure left a clear trail.
Eli shook his head.
Yeah, for now, they're wanting to get as far from this place as they can in a hurry. A little later on, when they think they've got time, they'll take the trouble to cover their tracks. Then they'll disappear like smoke. There'll be hell to trail unless we catch up to them before that.
Michael looked around to see if anyone would claim leadership. He pointedly avoided Andrew. Most of the men seemed to be looking at Eli, seemingly assuming that because he was by a wide margin the oldest, his experience would make him the logical choice. Eli felt the pressure and quickly demurred.
Michael, these old eyes ain't as good as they was, but yours was always sharp, as I remember.
Michael hesitated, waiting to see if anyone would challenge his leadership or express a preference for someone else. No one spoke, least of all Andrew. Whatever his disagreements with his older brother might be in regard to family responsibilities, he had confidence in Michael's ability to carry this burden. Michael had more of their father in him than Andrew did.
Let's be getting on about the business, then.
Michael turned the bay horse and led off at a trot. Andrew half expected someone to protest the slow pace, but no one did. This trail was so broad and plain that they could have followed it in a lope. But that abuse would run their mounts into the ground in a few miles. Even if they were fortunate enough to overtake their quarry before that, the Indians would probably outrun the pursuers' tired horses. Andrew saw impatience in the eyes of young Zeb Willett, but the youth accepted the necessity of the slower pace without complaint. No one else spoke of a desire to push harder, though most probably wished they could. Andrew took the lack of argument as a promising sign. These were frontiersmen who knew what they were about, or at least were willing to put their faith in a leadership that knew what it was doing. Andrew looked back once, wishing he could see the cabin, wishing he knew that someone had arrived with that promised wagon to take Marie and the boy to a place of greater safety. Like Zeb Willett, he had to accept some things on faith. If Michael was concerned, and Andrew thought certainly he must be, he gave no sign. He kept riding, his gaze shifting between the distant horizon and the tracks on the ground. Andrew could only guess what his brother was thinking. He thought it likely that Michael was remembering a time when he himself had been young, though not so young as the captive Willett boy, and had faced death in a strange land at the hands of an implacable enemy. Someone had come to Michael's rescue. It was time now, if it could be done, that Michael lead the way to the rescue of a boy much like the youth he had once been.